The hills drew nearer. They made an undulating ridge, often rising almost to 1,000 feet, and here and there falling again to low clefts or passes leading into the eastern land beyond. Along the crest of the ridge, the hobbits could see what looked to be the remains of green-grown walls and dikes, and in the clefts there still stood the ruins of old works of stone. By night they had reached the feet of the westward slopes, and there they camped. It was the night of the 5th of October, and they were 6 days out from Bree. In the morning they found, for the first time since they had left the Chetwood, a track plain to see. They turned right and followed it southwards. It ran cunningly, taking a line that seemed chosen so as to keep as much hidden as possible from the view, both of the hilltops above and of the flats to the west. It dived into dells and hugged steep banks, and where it passed over flatter and more open ground on either side of it, there were lines of large boulders and hewn stones that screened the travellers almost like a hedge. "I wonder who made this path, and what for?" said Merry, as they walked along one of these avenues, where the stones were unusually large and closely set. "I'm not sure that I like it. It has a, well, rather a barrow-whitish look. Is there any barrow on Weathertop?"
"No, there's no barrow on Weathertop, nor on any of these hills," answered Strider. "The men of the West did not live here, though in their later days they defended the hills for a while against the evil that came out of Angmar. This path was made to serve the forts along the walls. But long before, in the first days of the North Kingdom, they built a great watchtower on Weathertop. Armonsul, they called it. It was burned and broken, and nothing remains of it now but a tumbled ring, like a rough crown on the old hill's head. Yet once it was tall and fair. It is told that Elendil stood there watching for the coming of Gil-galad out of the west in the days of the last alliance." The hobbits gazed at Strider. It seemed that he was learned in old lore as well as in the ways of the wild.
"Who was Gil-galad?" asked Merry, but Strider did not answer and seemed to be lost in thought. Suddenly a low voice murmured, "Gil-galad was an elven king, of him the harpers sadly sing, the last whose realm was fair and free between the mountains and the sea. His sword was long, his lance was keen, his shining helm afar was seen. The countless stars of heaven's field were mirrored in his silver shield. But long ago he rode away, and where he dwelleth none can say, for into darkness fell his star in Mordor, where the shadows are." The others turned in amazement, for the voice was Sam's.
"Don't stop," said Merry. "That's all I know," stammered Sam, blushing. "I learned it from Mr. Bilbo when I was a lad.
He used to tell me tales like that, knowing how I was always one for hearing about elves. It was Mr. Bilbo as taught me my letters. He was mighty book-learned, was dear old Mr. Bilbo, and he wrote poetry. He wrote what I have just said."
"He did not make it up," said Strider. "It's part of the lay that is called the Fall of Gil-galad, which is in an ancient tongue. Bilbo must have translated it. I never knew that."
"There was a lot more," said Sam, "all about Mordor. I didn't learn that part. It gave me the shivers. I never thought I should be going that way myself."
"Going to Mordor?" cried Pippin. "I hope it won't come to that."
"Do not speak that name so loudly," said Strider.
It was already midday when they drew near the southern end of the path and saw before them, in the pale clear light of the October sun, a grey-green bank, leading up like a bridge onto the northward slope of the hill. They decided to make for the top at once, while the daylight was broad. Concealment was no longer possible, and they could only hope that no enemy or spy was observing them. Nothing was to be seen moving on the hill. If Gandalf was anywhere about, there was no sign of him. On the western flank of Weathertop, they found a sheltered hollow,
at the bottom of which there was a bowl-shaped dell with grassy sides. There they left Sam and Pippin with the pony and their packs and luggage. The other three went on. After half an hour's plodding climb, Strider reached the crown of the hill. Frodo and Merry followed, tired and breathless. The last slope had been steep and rocky. On the top they found, as Strider had said, a wide ring of ancient stonework, now crumbling or covered with age-long grass. But in the centre a cairn of broken stones had been piled. They were blackened, as if with fire. About them the turf was burned to the roots, and all within the ring the grass was scorched and shrivelled, as if flames had swept the hilltop. But there was no sign of any living thing. Standing upon the rim of the ruined circle, they saw all round below them a wide prospect, for the most part of lands empty and featureless, except for patches of woodland away to the south, beyond which they caught here and there the glint of distant water. Beneath them on this southern side there ran like a ribbon the old road, coming out of the west and winding up and down, until it faded behind a ridge of dark land to the east. Nothing was moving on it. Following its line eastward with their eyes, they saw the mountains. The nearer foothills were brown and somber. Behind them stood taller shapes of grey, and behind those again were high white peaks glimmering among the clouds.
"Well, here we are," said Merry, "and very cheerless and uninviting it looks. There is no water and no shelter, and no sign of Gandalf. But I don't blame him for not waiting, if he ever came here."
"I wonder," said Strider, looking round thoughtfully. "Even if he was a day or two behind us at Bree, he could have arrived here first. He can ride very swiftly when need presses." Suddenly he stooped and looked at the stone on the top of the cairn. It was flatter than the others, and whiter, as if it had escaped the fire. He picked it up and examined it, turning it in his fingers.
"This has been handled recently," he said. "What do you think of those marks?"
On the flat underside, Frodo saw some scratches. "There seems to be a stroke, a dot, and three more strokes," he said.
"The stroke on the left might be a G-rune with thin branches," said Strider. "It might be a sign left by Gandalf, though one cannot be sure. The scratches are fine, and they certainly look fresh. But the marks might mean something quite different, and have nothing to do with us. Rangers use runes, and they come here sometimes."
"What could they mean, even if Gandalf made them?" asked Merry.
"I should say," answered Strider, "that they stood for G3, and were a sign that Gandalf was here on October the 3rd, that is, 3 days ago now. It would also show that he was in a hurry, and danger was at hand, so that he had no time or did not dare to write anything longer or plainer. If that is so, we must be wary."
"I wish we could feel sure that he made the marks, whatever they may mean," said Frodo. "It would be a great comfort to know that he was on the way, in front of us or behind us."
"Perhaps," said Strider. "For myself, I believe that he was here and was in danger. There have been scorching flames here, and now the light that we saw 3 nights ago in the eastern sky comes back to my mind. I guess that he was attacked on this hilltop, but with what result I cannot tell. He is here no longer, and we must now look after ourselves and make our own way to Rivendell as best we can."
"How far is Rivendell?" asked Merry, gazing round wearily.
The world looked wild and wide from Weathertop. "I don't know if the road has ever been measured in miles beyond the Forsaken Inn, a day's journey east of Rhee," answered Strider. "Some say it is so far, and some say otherwise. It's a strange road, and folk are glad to reach their journey's end, whether the time is long or short. But I know not how long it would take me on my own feet, with fair weather and no ill fortune. 12 days from here to the ford of Bruinen, where the road crosses the loud water that runs out of Rivendell. We have at least a fortnight's journey before us, for I do not think we shall be able to use the road."
"A fortnight," said Frodo. "A lot may happen in that time."
"It may," said Strider. They stood for a while silent on the hilltop, near its southward edge. In that lonely place, Frodo for the first time fully realized his homelessness and danger. He wished bitterly that his fortune had left him in the quiet and beloved Shire. He stared down at the hateful road, leading back westward to his home. Suddenly he was aware that two black specks were moving slowly along it, going westward. And looking again, he saw that three others were creeping eastward to meet them. He gave a cry and clutched Strider's arm. "Look," he said, pointing downwards. At once Strider flung himself on the ground behind the ruined circle, pulling Frodo down beside him. Merry threw himself alongside. "What is it?" he whispered. "I don't know, but I fear the worst," answered Strider. Slowly they crawled up to the edge of the ring again and peered through a cleft between two jagged stones. The light was no longer bright, for the clear morning had faded, and clouds creeping out of the east had now overtaken the sun as it began to go down. They could all see the black specks, but neither Frodo nor Merry could make out their shapes for certain. Yet something told them that there, far below, were black riders assembling on the road beyond the foot of the hill.
"Yes," said Strider, whose keener sight left them in no doubt. "The enemy is here."
Hastily they crept away and slipped down the north side of the hill to find their companions. Sam and Peregrine had not been idle. They had explored the small dell and the surrounding slopes. Not far away, they found a spring of clear water in the hillside, and near it footprints not more than a day or two old. In the dell itself, they found recent traces of a fire and other signs of a hasty camp. There were some fallen rocks on the edge of the dell nearest to the hill. Behind them, Sam came upon a small store of firewood, neatly stacked.
"I wonder if old Gandalf has been here," he said to Pippin. "Whoever it was put this stuff here meant to come back, it seems."
Strider was greatly interested in these discoveries.
"I wish I had waited and explored the ground down here myself," he said, hurrying off to the spring to examine the footprints. "It's just as I feared," he said when he came back. "Sam and Pippin have trampled the soft ground, and the marks are spoiled or confused. Rangers have been here lately. It is they who left the firewood behind. But there are also several newer tracks that were not made by rangers. At least one set was made only a day or two ago by heavy boots. At least one. I cannot now be certain, but I think there were many booted feet." He paused and stood in anxious thought. Each of the hobbits saw in his mind a vision of the cloaked and booted riders. If the horsemen had already found the dell, the sooner Strider led them somewhere else, the better. Sam viewed the hollow with great dislike, now that he had heard news of their enemies on the road, only a few miles away.
"Hadn't we better clear out quick, Mr. Strider?" he asked impatiently. "It's getting late, and I don't like this hole. It makes my heart sink somehow."
"Yes, we certainly must decide what to do at once," answered Strider, looking up and considering the time and the weather. "Well, Sam," he said at last, "I don't like this place either, but I can't think of anywhere better that we could reach before nightfall.
At least we are out of sight for the moment, and if we moved, we should be much more likely to be seen by spies. All we could do would be to go right out of our way back north on this side of the line of hills, where the land is all much the same as it is here. The road is watched, but we should have to cross it if we tried to take cover in the thickets away to the south. On the north side of the road, beyond the hills, the country is bare and flat for miles."
"Can the riders see?" asked Merry. "I mean, they seem usually to have used their noses rather than their eyes, smelling for us, if smelling is the right word, at least in the daylight. But you made us lie down flat when you saw them down below, and now you talk of being seen if we move."
"I was too careless on the hilltop," answered Strider. "I was very anxious to find some sign of Gandalf, but it was a mistake for three of us to go up and stand there so long. For the black horses can see, and the riders can use men and other creatures as spies, as we found at Bree.
They themselves do not see the world of light as we do, but our shapes cast shadows in their minds, which only the noon sun destroys, and in the dark they perceive many signs and forms that are hidden from us. Then they are most to be feared, and at all times they smell the blood of living things, desiring and hating it. Senses, too, there are other than sight or smell. We can feel their presence. It troubled our hearts. As soon as we came here, and before we saw them, they feel ours more keenly. Also, he added, and his voice sank to a whisper, the ring draws them near.
Is there no escape, then? Said Frodo, looking round wildly. If I move, I shall be seen and hunted. If I stay, I shall draw them to me.
Strider laid his hand on his shoulder.
There is still hope, he said. You are not alone. Let us take this wood that is set ready for the fire as a sign. There is little shelter or defense here, but fire shall serve for both. Sauron can put fire to his evil uses, as he can all things, but these riders do not love it, and fear those who wield it. Fire is our friend in the wilderness.
Maybe, muttered Sam. It's also as good a way of saying, here we are, as I can think of, bar shouting. Down in the lowest and most sheltered corner of the dell they lit a fire and prepared a meal. The shades of evening began to fall, and it grew cold. They were suddenly aware of great hunger, for they had not eaten anything since breakfast, but they dared not make more than a frugal supper. The lands ahead were empty of all save birds and beasts, unfriendly places deserted by all the races of the world. Rangers passed at times beyond the hills, but they were few and did not stay. Other wanderers were rare and of evil sorts. Trolls might stray down at times out of the northern valleys of the Misty Mountains. Only on the road would travelers be found, most often dwarves, hurrying along on business of their own, and with no help and few words to spare for strangers.
I don't see how our food can be made to last, said Frodo. We've been careful enough in the last few days, and this supper's no feast. But we've used more than we ought, if we have 2 weeks still to go, and perhaps more.
There is food in the wild, said Strider, bedding, root and herb, and I have some skill as a hunter at need. You need not be afraid of starving before winter comes, but gathering and catching food is long and weary work, and we need haste. So tighten your belts, and think with hope of the tables of Elrond's house.
The cold increased as darkness came on. Peering out from the edge of the dell, they could see nothing but a grey land now vanishing quickly into shadow. The sky above had cleared again and was slowly filled with twinkling stars. Frodo and his companions huddled round the fire, wrapped in every garment and blanket they possessed, but Strider was content with a single cloak, and sat a little apart, drawing thoughtfully at his pipe. As night fell, and the light of the fire began to shine out brightly, he began to tell them tales to keep their minds from fear. He knew many histories and legends of long ago, of elves and men and the good and evil deeds of the elder days. They wondered how old he was, and where he had learned all this lore.
"Tell us of Kil-galad," said Merry suddenly, when he paused at the end of a story of the elf kingdoms. "Do you know any more of that old lay that you spoke of?"
"I do indeed," answered Strider. "So also does Frodo, for it concerns us closely."
Merry and Pippin looked at Frodo, who was staring into the fire.
"I know only the little that Gandalf has told me," said Frodo slowly. "Gil-galad was the last of the great elf kings of Middle-earth. Gil-galad is starlight in their tongue. With Elendil, the elf friend, he went to the land of—"
"No," said Strider, interrupting. "I don't think that tale should be told now with the servants of the enemy at hand. If we win through to the house of Elrond, you may hear it there, told in full."
"Then tell us some other tale of the old days," begged Sam. "A tale about the elves before the fading time. I would dearly like to hear more about elves. The dark seems to press round so close."
I will tell you the tale of Tenuvial, said Strider. In brief,